Survivor Specialist Phil and Alexa are back with another episode of our Ultimate Survivor season, and we are 2 months and 3 days away from the premiere of Survivor 41. So I just want to throw that in there because as we're winding this down, as we're getting through this Ultimate Survivor season, we have never been closer to a new season of Survivor than we are right now, and it feels good. We are only, I think that adds up to about 65, 63, 64 days, somewhere in that range, and I'm very excited for it. Maybe Andy Vogel could tell us since he was on The Chase last night. That's our patron, so become a patron.
Ooh, look at that. Look at that transition.
In 35 seconds, I got everything I wanted to get in right off the bat. Tonight, we are talking about True Lies, the first episode, I believe, as John Millsap says here, where Boston Rob is called Boston Rob. Also the first time Boston Rob was voted out of the game, one of, I believe it's four times he was voted out of the game. And also, though, one of the best played episodes of his career. I really believe that, even though he ultimately goes home. And I'm very excited to talk about this one. The next episode, the final nine, always gets all the credit from Survivor Marquesas. But I actually believe True Lies is the best episode of this season. One of the best episodes of like the first 10 seasons overall, because it really did shape the way that the game could be played because of Sean and John and Rob and Kathy and how they all go at it. And it is so awesome to watch. And this is also the episode where everybody thought Tammy Leitner was going to win. So Alexa, hi, welcome to the podcast.
See, this episode reminded me of the fact that Tammy is a person. So I'm glad that we both got something about Tammy out of this episode. Well, I'm excited to talk about this too, because this episode solidified for me why I don't think Boston Rob is a good player. Like this like is Boston Rob. Like this is his origin story. This is the first time he becomes Boston Rob. He also starts off wearing a Patriots hat, not a Red Sox hat. I feel like that has been changed throughout history. Love the Patriots hat. But I mean, let's get into it. I mean, I think he gaslights people like that. That's how he plays. And in this situation, it doesn't work for him. I think the difference is it does work for him later on.
This is my big reason why Vesepia is a better player than Boston Rob. And it's because at the beginning of this episode, right away, he says, Vesepia is kissing ass. I can't take it. She's so fake. All that. That's how you win Survivor. That's how you win $1 million. Like you can't win being Boston Rob your first season. Tony wasn't Boston Rob. Boston Rob is legitimately Russell. Like him and Russell are the same person in their first seasons. It's just Boston Rob wasn't playing it for the cameras. He was a new thing we hadn't seen yet. This is really the first very villainous player we have in Survivor. Season one doesn't have real villains. Season two, Jerry Manthe is not a real villain. Season three doesn't have a villain anywhere to find. Lex is a villain, but people liked him a lot.
He's like a good, yeah.
Boston Rob is 100% a villain. He is trying to antagonize people. The way he is trying to win Survivor is because he's a little sociopathic. He has no problem making you uncomfortable because he's not uncomfortable. And that's fine with him. And that's how he tries to play this episode. We had never seen anything like this before. And while it doesn't work for him in this episode, it ultimately is the reason why Marquesas turns on its head, because the thoughts were already there for Kathy and Pascal and Aaliyah that, hey, Rob did bring this up to Kathy, and Kathy pushes so hard at final nine because of what Rob planted in her head earlier. This is the only compliment I'm ever giving Boston Rob. So you guys got to just deal with this now.
But this episode is like both a blessing and a curse for us, because we can't stand him. But like he goes home in this episode, but we have to talk about him a lot.
Yeah. And like you said, like it proves why he's not as good as everybody makes him out to be. Like to me, when people say Boston Rob, one of the top five, no, he can't be, because this episode proves that if he was a better Survivor player, he could have easily won the game by playing it the same way that Vesepia did. John Carroll straight up says to his face, and I really think John Carroll is being 100% genuine. He says, if you didn't go and run around telling everybody this, we would have been in the final seven. And I think he's genuine when he says that.
I think he is too, because I think John Carroll, for as cocky of a player as he is as well at this point, he's like, he wants to wheel and deal a little bit. Like he's already like worked with Boston Rob and Sean and Vesepia to an extent. So I think John Carroll kind of likes to be the, like, not necessarily the flip flopper, but the one who's in charge. And then, as you know, when he gets burned, he doesn't trust the guy anymore. That is a very, very fair and normal, and 41 seasons later, still like acceptable opinion to have.
That is, yeah, that's how everybody plays the game. If you burn me once, screw you. And he and Rob gets caught. But what I love about this episode is Rob's approach. Remember, coming into this season, so the first two seasons, they go into the merge 5-5. Season three, it goes in 6-4, but we had the kind of weird swap, and then the tribes were even going in after that and whatever. Like, the tribes were 5-5 going in. Clarence was kind of an easy boot because people were worried about him and how strong he was going to be. So that was different. This season, though, not only is the original Rotu outnumbering the original Mata Amu, which it's not Maramu, it's Mata Amu.
Who said Maramu? Did someone
that's
say
all
that?
Kathy says. The entire is Maramu.
Kathy's so great.
I love her. But so it's the original Rotu is outnumbering the original Mata Amu 7-3. And the new Rotu is outnumbering the new Mata Amu 7-3. So it's there's a huge disparity here. So we had never seen
Weird swap this time.
They did the swap where they kept the tribe numbers the same. That's
why it was brutal
8-4.
Swap.
Yeah, they did. Or it was 8-5. They kept it. That's why it was Gina, Sarah, Kathy, Nalia, and Pascal. And Pappy always said, "It's me and the ladies. How the hell are we going to do anything here?" But all that's to say is we had never seen somebody have to overcome those odds, because even in Africa, the four never really had a chance to overcome those odds. Kelly, what's her Goldsmith, rest in peace there. You know, she really did, you know. But all that being said, in this episode, Rob had to throw everything at the wall because he knew that ultimately where he was going to finish was 7th place, 6th place, or 5th place. That row 2-4 was going to stick together. Him, Sean, and V were screwed. This was his chance to make the move. He made the move one day early, I guess, but tried to convince Kathy, "Hey, Kathy, trust me, they're going to vote you out." And I really believe that if he had not done what he does in this episode, Kathy does go home. And then who knows if Rob's actually able to flip anybody, or if John Carroll and Tammy Leitner are the final two of the season.
Wow. I mean, what a season this would have been. But I think you're right about that, because Kathy, like, this is like where kind of where we hit the turning point of Kathy, where she, you know, she starts off not doing great and nobody, you know, nobody really likes her. And her growth arc is that she ends up being like a really strategic player by the end. We are right now in that middle ground where she's figuring herself out. She's getting comfortable, but obviously hearing your name, like, you know, hearing that people wanted to get rid of you. And then there's that horrifyingly uncomfortable conversation with Rob, Zoe, and Kathy, which is absolutely brutal to be a part of as a viewer, that like, maybe if it was a person who, and there aren't many people who could do this, who could have taken that information that Rob gave to Kathy, true or not, and like not act upon it, none of this would have happened. But he said it to Kathy, who I think he thought he'd be able to influence, and Kathy kind of like freaks out. And that's what snowballs this whole thing.
Well, and what's funny is this actually is why Kathy trusts Rob so much in season 8 in All Stars. And that's why her and Lex ultimately make the decision they do to get rid of Jerry and keep Amber, is because Kathy watches season 4 and realizes everything Rob was saying was truthful and real. And they really were gunning for her. And they were going to vote her out first. And so that's why she trusted Rob so much coming into All Stars. So it has multiple layers. But this scene is a preview of Kathy, Lex, and Rob. Instead, it's Rob, Zoe, who's no offense to Zoe, you're not quite Lex.
Not there.
And Kathy. And it's the same thing, though. Rob just does not care. He does not care. He is, and I don't know if he still is. I don't know what his personality is like now. But in season 4, he is a straight-up sociopath. He does not care about your feelings, and it brings him joy to watch you be uncomfortable.
And I think that's still pretty similar, because we go to Winners at War and everyone is a grown ass adult and he still tries to get, you know, Sarah Lacina to not stand up and talk to people like at, you know, and it's just, he's very stuck in his ways. And I think the reason, honestly, that Rob is more popular than a player like Russell is he's like his Boston accent is like, It's I don't know. I mean, I like it, but that's because it reminds me of home. But like, he's good looking. Like, he's funny enough. Like, he probably reminds you of someone you know. Like, nobody knows a Russell. Everybody like has that friend from college who's Boston Rob. So I think he's just a bit more relatable in that. And then you get to All Stars and it's like, okay, he does fall in love. Like, he's not a POS. Like, he's a decent guy. But on Survivor, he's not that great of a guy.
Yeah, no, agreed. And like, you know, I always do the whole, like, I am the most like anti-cancel culture person there is, but I always do the whole, if Boston Rob played his first season and said the stuff he was saying to Marquesas now, he'd be screwed. I mean, instead, he's the face of the franchise.
People forget what he did in Marquesas.
Yeah, he's the face of the franchise. Not for nothing. He did the same thing Shannon did in Survivor Nicaragua. Same thing.
Possibly worse. Ooh.
Yeah. And this was also at a time where it was
some money. We should talk about bad Boston Rob is more often.
Yes, Jay Lou, longtime lurker. Thanks for all the great content. And thank you for the super chat. I think that's what it's called. But all that being said, in a time where it wasn't as well received, or, you know, I don't want to say well received because, like, that sounds weird to be like gay people weren't well received. But at a time when the LGBTQ community was not a focal point in America, and it was definitely more ostracizing than good, he does to John what he does to John. And like, at the end of the day, I'm not sitting here saying Rob should be canceled, but Rob was a villain, and Rob has, and I think what is appealing about Rob is he does have that frat boy mentality, but he does also have a softer side that you never get to see from those frat boys. If you look at who Rob goes for, yes, he goes for Sarah in this season, but then he's going for Kathy, who's like the mom, and they're going to have like a father-son type relationship, or mother-son, sorry, Kathy. And then he goes, you know, he goes for, what do you call it? Like, he tries to get Pascal and Nalia, and he's going with Vesepia and Sean. And like, he's kind of going a route where like he's a dick, but you like him. Russell just kind of comes across as like mean, and Rob doesn't come across as mean, even though half the stuff he's doing is mean. Cause he's just got that personality. We'd say that's something my friends would say. And we'd sit there, drink a beer and laugh about it. And then whatever, we'd have 30 Coors Lights. I can't hear you. Did I lose my?
That's exactly it. And that was the transition I was going to make. Rob gets in a fight, or doesn't even get in a fight. Like, Rob and John Carroll are spitting at each other. John Carroll makes a very like pointed comment about how he cannot trust him from a strategic standpoint. And Rob just screams, well, now it's personal. Like, didn't have to be. But then earlier in the episode, he's pounding 30 Bud Lights with Kathy, somebody who he probably never would have hung out with before. So that I think you're right. Like, there is the softer side that you don't usually see with his type of player. And yeah. I mean, a pizza and beer date, like, literally nothing sounds better. And he's
Alexa is gone. I don't know what ended up happening. I don't know how long it was silent. I think Alexa's internet was just a little wonky. But anyway, I agree with her. A pizza and beer date is great and all of that fun. The thing that gets me with Boston Rob and what goes on in this episode, and like why I don't really feel so negatively towards him, and I'm not as confused when he's going at John, is because of how passionately Sean is also going at John. Like, Sean is very passionately pounding his chest. We team, we team, we team. He's doing all of that stuff. And it's really interesting to see that, because then I'm saying to myself, well, it's not just Boston Rob then. There's more to it than just Boston Rob. There is something that John did that they feel like crossed the line. And because of how passionately Sean is going at it with John, it does make me think maybe there was more to this than we really, really got to see. And maybe there was a little bit more, you know, so I don't know. That's the only reason why I don't give Boston Rob such a hard time here. Alexa, how is your internet? It seems like you're still a little bit off, but how are we doing?
It doesn't seem to be much. Actually, right now it does seem to be a bit better, but I can get another computer if I mess up again. And it looks like I am, so I'm going to leave.
All right, go get a new computer. I'll sit here and I'll just talk about my favorite person on planet Earth. All right. If you're not a patron yet and you want to be, this is pretty much what it is. I did an 18-minute episode about the season 41 women on Tuesday for our $10 and $20 patrons. 18 minutes of me talking to myself. Alexa wasn't on it. So I'm good at kind of talking to myself here, I guess. But what I love about this episode is this was one of, to me, the really first ultra-dramatic episodes of Survivor where it felt like something was going to happen. The Kelly Goldsmith episode, I always am shocked that Lex doesn't go home in Africa. Kelly Goldsmith should have been successful. Lex should have went home. That should have worked perfectly. But we hadn't seen a flip actually work up until that point. And then it doesn't work there. This was the first time where it felt like it was going to work. And Lex was like the face of that season. Lex, Big Tom, Ethan, you know, amazing trio. The road to four didn't feel like the face of this season, despite the fact that they were totally in control of the game. And so when you get to this final 10 situation and Boston Rob is trying to get Kathy, those are kind of the two faces of this season up until that point, which makes you think, wow, are they really going to be able to pull this off and get this going? And Alexa is back. But it almost makes me think, yes, they are going to be able to get this going because Boston Rob and Kathy were such big personalities up until this point. So that's what I love about this episode. It felt like we really were going to see a twist and a change and something else come up that we had never seen in Survivor history. Ultimately, not how it ends up going down, but it felt real in this one. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that Rob has no problem putting people in awkward situations like he does to John, like he does to Zoe, like he does to the general when the general says, "I'm the general. That's all I am." It's very weird to see a grown man talking about how he is very loyal to himself because "I'm the general. I'm only loyal to the general." It's like, all right, dude, it's one thing to talk about yourself in the third person. It's another to talk about your nickname in the third person. It's a little weird. A little weird.
And it's weird, too, because it's the general and Bubba from Vanuatu. Mm-hmm. The difference with, like, these earlier seasons is, like, why is that his nickname? Like it just one day it just switched to that. And the general also, like, this, like, puts on a pink buff and he's like, "I'm not a man anymore." Mm-hmm. It's like, I know everything I need to know about you. You call yourself the general and you can't wear a pink buff. Like, we got it.
And he's a Long Island limousine driver.
You can hear it.
He's everything you would think a Long Island limousine driver would be. But what's funny about this, though, and it kind of goes back to what I said about Tammy earlier, everybody on that tribe gets some sort of blast from Boston Rob. Mm-hmm. Tammy doesn't. And instead, Tammy gets the confessional about how she's going to win this whole thing. And I remember, like, I was 10 years old, whatever. It wasn't that old. But I remember at that time, it really seemed, and like, if you look back on it, people who were older watching it at the time, really, it looked like Tammy was going to win it. Somehow, John was going to get screwed. The other people weren't going to be able to pull it off. Pascal and Nalia, people just really weren't sure of because we'd seen the same shtick with Elizabeth and Roger. And Kathy was everybody's rooting interest, but it seemed like, oh, God, like, the road to four are going to run this. This is what every season of Survivor's been. And here's Tammy giving this confessional and not getting any bad press from Boston Rob. And she doesn't go any further. But it's funny how, like, that, like, she doesn't get any of the heat. And I wonder if that's because Boston Rob never felt any type of connection with her. I don't know what it is. But he goes very hard after Zoe. He goes very hard after John. And he goes way harder after Rob than you would think he would.
I think maybe because Tammy just is, like, inoffensive. I mean, I don't think, like, there's, I think Rob likes to go up against the people who, like, he likes to go up against the big guns. And I think he just, like, didn't assess Tammy as that. And maybe Zoe, I think Zoe's just a bit more abrasive than maybe Tammy is.
Zoe abrasive? No. I mean, and Zoe, I think the frustrating thing about Zoe is, like, there's just no personality there. So when Rob is arguing with her and trying to put her on the spot, he's getting nothing. And like when she lies, it is the most blatant lie. She pauses, stares at him, and then is like, "No." And it's like, dude, you just like, you either say, "No, that's an absolute lie," and you flat out deny it right away. Or like you just say, you pause and then you just say, "Yeah, okay, fine. I said that to you." But like you can tell she's thinking, what's my best approach? And she takes like 10 seconds. And Rob gives her such a hard time for it, but like he's not wrong.
She does not do a good job of seeming like she's innocent. Like she does like absolutely does not stick the landing on that.
No, not at all. And so it's like all of those little things. Like Rob is going after this road to four, and he's doing it in a way to be like, "Come on, Kathy, bring your people. I have V. I have Sean. Let's make it happen." And you would think that Kathy, I think if it was a newer season, Kathy would have 100% flipped because we see her flip the next week. I just think they were too nervous. And I think they were really scared of Boston Rob in individual challenges too. I think that's something that does not get mentioned here, but he was insanely good at this point.
Yeah. And that's like, he's amazing at challenges. He's good at team challenges. He's good at individual. He's really good from the challenge perspective.
And he's still good at it.
He does not get, I will give him this. We just, you know, chat on him for me for the past 14 minutes, Phil for the past 19 minutes. He does not get the credit he deserves from a challenge based perspective. He like does not come up when people talk about best challenge beast, and it's because he hasn't won five. Like he's not Ozzy or like or Joe or anyone like that, he's good, but for some reason people don't give him that credit.
It's because he's not flashy with it, but in Marquesas, yeah, had he made it longer, he would have won way more challenges. Like, he just would have. Yeah. Like, he's just very physically good. And it's hard because in All-Stars, all the physically good people were out of the game by the time they actually hit the merge.
And this is still one of those this is still one of those seasons where, like this immunity challenge is, like, kind of ridiculous. And it's – and, like, I mean – Kathy ends up winning it, and I don't think this is Kathy's only immunity win, but this is one where, like, it's an equalizing kind of challenge. But she's, like, adorable when she wins it. And I know, like, Jeff, like, allegedly hates this season, but when she wins it, like, Jeff's kind of having fun with her. It's – I don't know. It's cool.
And I always love that Rob literally gets himself knocked out of the game because he's a smartass. He would have won that challenge if he wasn't a smartass, but he tries to splash him and touches the damn thing because he trips.
Sounds about right.
I mean, if he wasn't a smartass, he would have survived this, and then he would have been on the jury, and then he probably would have been higher in my rankings. Who knows what he would have been able to do? One step higher. But then Sean Rector probably goes home here, and honestly, the season's probably worse than it actually turned out to be.
Yeah, because you get – the thing with these kind of villains is you don't want them to be there the whole time. Like, I could not – like, this season would be – like watching Boston Rob just, like, gaslight people for five more weeks would have been terrible. It's like when, like, Bradley goes home at the right time. Like, Russell, in my opinion, like, that personality lasts too long for, like, mm-hmm, my liking.
So, now, my question to you is, so, like, Rob is definitely gaslighting people. But, like, are the is the Road to Four also gaslighting here, in your opinion?
I think they are. I think gaslighting is probably the wrong word here. That's, like, a trendy word that everyone likes to use. However, what Rob's problem is he completely changes the argument in the middle of an argument. Like, they are arguing about strategy, and then he's like, well, now it's personal. Now you're making it personal. There is literally nothing personal about the conversation. Rob got caught in a lie. He's the kind of guy who can't admit when he's wrong. He never, never, never admits when he's wrong. And those kind of people are going to get figured out. They're not dumb.
That's not a Northeast trait at all. Not at all.
We are best at everything, always.
This was Rob, though, and this is why Rob would have never won a season had he never played Redemption Island and, like, had Redemption Island not be full of just a bunch of whatevers. It's because he plays and tries to intimidate. And in Winners at War, they see right through it. And I think that's ultimately why Kathy doesn't go with him, because he's so aggressive. And she even says it when they sit down and have their meal. He's too quick to say, I want to be with you. I want to be with you. Let's make this happen. He's so aggressive. If he would just tune it down a little bit, he'd be a better player. And it's why I don't give him the credit that he deserves, or maybe that everybody gives him too much credit. I think I give him the proper amount of credit, but he's too aggressive. He's too in your face. He tries to intimidate you. If he's going to lose the argument, he wants to do that. I think he's 100% right with Zoe, first of all. I think he's 100%. Zoe was going to get rid of Kathy, blah, 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 and she gets caught in the lie. But the John Carroll scene is the different one, and that was what I was talking about when you weren't on here. But, like, the only reason I'm questioning that one is because why is Sean so passionate about it? And Sean says he has that confessional about, me and John have had conversations about being a gay man in America, being a black man in America, how that is, how we feel, like, left out and all that. And it felt more than game.
Yeah.
And so he's talking about that, and it makes me, like, if Sean was that passionate, John must have said something. Because at the end of the day, while Rob is being a pain in the ass and being a dick, Sean and Vesepia haven't done anything. And they don't deserve to be lumped in with it. No, they were hanging out.
Yeah. And I think that's a bit of their personality. I think the reason Vesepia wins this is because she doesn't care who the top dog is. But I think you're right. And the Road to Four, like, they're not a good alliance. Like, like, we just talked about how abrasive Zoe is. The General isn't particularly the most likable player out there. And John Carroll, like, he's very cocky, and he does not do a great job of being an alliance leader. He gets turned around and hit as soon as there's an opportunity. So they are by no means, like, the model of what an alliance should look like.
Yeah, and I think obnoxious
about it too.
Very obnoxious about it. And I think that even though it doesn't happen until next week, this was kind of like the first episode where it shows that the people who don't have the numbers could get the numbers in Survivor. We'd never seen it happen. Kelly Goldsmith's episode showed that it could happen, but this one really showed that it could happen. And what's funny is the Baran tribe is up 6-4 when they come in and they vote out one of their own and it almost screws them over. And then this episode, they don't vote out one of their own, but by voting out Rob instead of voting out Kathy Pascal or Nalia or somebody like that, it does open the door so that you can get outnumbered 5-4. And it's the same mistake in back-to-back seasons. It's getting cocky and thinking, oh, we're fine. We have the numbers. Nothing can happen. So let's get rid of who we feel, you know, is kind of the easy vote and whatever. They probably should have kept Rob because at the end of the day, Rob was going to drive anybody that was with them nuts. Vote out Sean, vote out Vesepia, vote out one of them. Rob isn't going to be able to swing Kathy, Pascal, and Nalia at that point then because they're just going to be like, well, Rob, you're just trying to cause stuff. Like, we're seeing you do this. We're seeing you try to cause shit. And now that you're down to numbers, you're just going to keep doing it. And they probably would have had a better chance to win, but they got cocky and they got rid of the biggest thorn in their side, which is exactly what the Baran tribe does the season before, because they get rid of the guy who they just think is too good at challenges. And Big Tom was still mad at him for eating beans. And it almost cost them the game. I mean, they should have failed.
Yeah.
Just like the Road 2-4 do.
Yeah, I know. And it's funny that, like, they're also small. Like, four is not, you know, at a, like, in a merge situation, even if we're not, like, especially, you know, in merges now where they're between 11 and 13 people, four is not enough. Like, you can't be a group of four and be obnoxiously exclusive about it, because people will figure it out and outsiders don't even have to like each other that much. Just like what happens in the next episode where they had no reason to work together, but the Road 2-4 were just too loud about it.
Yeah, and what's funny is in Marquesas, which is a very underrated season, I think it gets kind of lost in the shuffle. Mm-hmm. It's still, to this day, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm 99% sure I'm right. For a season that starts with 16 people and has, you know, whatever jury format, it has the most lopsided jury format, final nine, of any season. 7-2. Row 2 is up 7-2 at the final nine, and they lose. Every other season, the tribe with the higher numbers coming into the merge won. This is the biggest, I think, from the 16 people seasons. I think this is the biggest differential at a 10-person merge with 7-3, and they lose. And I think that, like, saved Survivor, because if Row 2 wins, we just talked about how they're not interesting for the most part. And they won seven. They were up 7-3. Now, oh, the Row 2-4 is going to pick off Sean, Rob, Vesepia, and then pick off Pascal, Nalia, Kathy, and great. Now we have this final four. If that's what happens, what are we watching for? And then Thailand is a travesty. What are we watching for? And I think that's really interesting to see play out, that mm-hmm. the most lopsided it's ever been, they lose.
Yeah, and I think, like what you said about the Row 2-4 not being particularly interesting, they also don't really like each other that much. Like, even that, like, the Row 2-4 specifically, I feel like they don't even like each other that much. There's not a lot of gelling, and, like, Pascal and Nalia are a duo. Kathy, everyone likes her, but she's very solo. And Sean and Vesepia are an amazing duo. Mm-hmm. And so there isn't, like, the relationships are not very natural. Like, it doesn't seem like anyone really likes each other on the season, especially because probably the two nicest people are the two in the final two, and everyone absolutely tears them apart.
Yeah.
This is just an angry group of people, and that's also not going to be a super well-received season.
Yeah. Although, you know, I mean, I think that those seasons are better on a rewatch because yeah. now you can watch it from the entertainment standpoint as opposed to, like, being disgusted week to week. I do think, like, a Marquesas, a Gabon, those seasons get better on rewatches because you're like, God, somebody's going to get it. They're going to get it. And, like, even when they get mad at the end, it's like, yeah, you guys can insult Vesepia. They do the whole religion thing to her at the end and blah, blah, blah. But guess what? She's a millionaire. She's yeah. a millionaire, and all of you aren't, and not for nothing. Like, and, like, I do feel bad for John Carroll because I think that he's been too forgotten and probably should have played again. But other than that, it's like none of you play again. And Vesepia doesn't play again either, but she gets the money. And the people yeah. who – Kathy plays again, and she's not angry. She's not angry. Like, she was happy about it. And, you know, it's just – it's funny how that works out. And really, the fall of the Row 2-4, I'm telling, like, one of the biggest things in Survivor history. And I mean, maybe now it's too old. Maybe now people like don't pay attention to it as much. But without that, I don't think we'd be coming into a season 41. I really don't.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. Like this is a very like, it's like iconic in a very strategy heavy way, which is not super obvious. It's not like Colby versus Jerry, which is very obvious. Like Richard Hatch being Richard Hatch, mm-hmm. Rudy being Rudy. That it just isn't as in your face. So I think that's why this isn't super well received. But
yeah.
Preseason, first time I watched it, I hated it. And now I really like it.
So did I. And now it just keeps moving up my rankings. And I think I have it above Borneo. I think I have it above Thailand. I think I have it above All Stars. Like I might even have it above Australia at this point. Like it's so good.
It's
And like these, like watch the final 11, the final 10, and the final, I would say this season, if you watch from the Hunter's 14th. If you watch from the swap, watch from final 12 to final 9, just watch that. And it's classic. Like every one of those episodes with Gabe going, Gina going, Rob going, John going, that sets up what Survivor is now. Mm-hmm. And it's so integral. And like a lot of the early seasons that we'll praise do not have that monumental of stretches in these early seasons like that one does. Amazon's probably the only one that comes close in the first 8. Pearl Islands doesn't because of the whole stupid twist thing.
And I mean, I feel silly even bringing this up, but like Marquesas is a location that like, if you Google it, it doesn't really exist. Like it is so in the middle of nowhere. And during that immunity challenge, like you see there's the beach, but there are just like gigantic mountains. Like it is absolutely stunning. At the beginning of this episode, they find a skull and that is like, they just move on. Like a dead body might've been there. There's still like enough wonder and there's still enough like, oh my God, they are on a remote island. Mm-hmm. And that always adds to these earlier seasons.
You want to do something fun. I actually did this. Look up how you would get to Marquesas from where you are. Wherever you are right now, look up how you would get to Marquesas. It is interesting as all hell, everybody. It is interesting. And I was doing this from like LA, I think. LA, you would think, okay, like it's a Pacific island. It wouldn't be that hard. I think I had to take like 7 flights or something. Like it's ridiculous because it's really in the middle of nowhere.
It is absolutely in the middle of the road. Oh, it's trying to have me walk.
You don't want to walk that. That wouldn't be as fun.
Yeah. Like you, it's so, and even if you look at it in a map, like you put it in the middle and it's all water. Like there's, if something actually happened to these people, like I don't even know where the nearest hospital is. You're getting on multiple helicopters to get to a hospital.
Yeah. I want to go to Marquesas, $201 flights.
I mean, honestly, that's cheaper than me flying to visit you in Miami. So
isn't that crazy?
Maybe
because you're literally not allowed to go there right now. I don't know.
Who knows? But $201. Look into it, people.
Yeah, it's just really crazy. It's crazy how far away it is from stuff. I don't know. Bruce Perrault says it truly is not. So maybe not. But I'm telling you, I think it's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, but looks beautiful.
Yeah. Anyway,
last note I had: Vesepia praise. She's like getting the whole group for a prayer circle and absolutely butchers the name of the new tribe, which I just absolutely hilarious.
Solianu.
Got it.
Yeah. No, it's very fun.
I thought that was funny.
It is. I really enjoy, I enjoy little things like that where it's like, clearly that was a tribe name that was kind of like forced to them. Let's be real.
Yeah, I thought it was. I mean, Brad and Kathy were too blasted off of Coors Lights to make up a good drink. Yeah,
there's no way they knew what was going
How
on.
How many Coors Lights do you think they drank?
They probably drank all 30 of them. I mean, they were 30 the only
Coors Lights is like hydrating. I mean, that's good.
That's true. I mean, I doubt that. Yeah, they're not like hammered, but also they hadn't been eating very much. So
that's very true.
I don't know.
Next week we are taking a very, very different approach. We are going back to the golden ages of Survivor. We are going to Micronesia for episode 9, for our 9-player episode. We are talking about I Promise, which is the Aussie blindside in Survivor Micronesia. We have shockingly not talked about this episode. Everyone talks about Eric getting voted out, but Aussie getting voted out in Micronesia is unbelievable.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about it. One of the biggest blindsides at the time, and it really set in motion a string of blindsides that were just absolutely unbelievable. So I'm excited to talk about that one. And yeah, that's next week, so make sure to tune into that. If you're not a patron, become a patron, patreon.com/survivorspecialist. I'm also happy they just found out that it's a four-hour flight from Tahiti to Marquesas. So we were right. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's very much in the middle of nowhere.
Is that in like near Australia?
It's out there. I don't know. I don't know geography that well. But patreon.com/survivorspecialist. Our top two tiers are our top tier is getting daily content. We're going to try to do this pretty much up until September 1st. Then we're going to have a lot of content going on the YouTube channel. So it won't be quite daily, but we'll still be putting stuff up, like interesting stuff about season 41. We have our retrospective. Our retrospective drops tomorrow, but it's actually a prospective where Alexa and I each give our 10 best takes on season 41, our 10 bold takes. So that is actually for $10 and $20 patrons. $10 patrons are getting weekly content. We're recording our Q&A right after this. So make sure to check all of that out. I think that, you know, you guys would like it. If you're watching these and you're not listening to that, I feel like you'd probably like that as well. So check out patreon.com/survivorspecialist. Otherwise, we'll be back next Monday talking about, yeah, I promise. That's good. That's so much fun. That's Eliza bugging her eyes out of her head, right? I think that's the first time.
Yeah, it's going to be a really good one.
Can't wait. Can't wait.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.